For our log files, I said we should keep doing them the rest of the semester. Can we always hand them in under, like, can we just keep working on the same one?
That's a great question. Yeah, so in the log files, I typically just do one big log file. Okay. If you want to break them up into some other organization, that's okay too. It's easiest for me if you have one log file that's just got a star entry at the top level for each one.
So you don't mind if we hand in the whole thing every time?
That's like, exactly what I expect. Okay. Yeah. There's lots of tools that let me do, I can do a diff or a difference calculation between the two, and I can actually see.
Oh, so you see what's new.
Yeah, so I can easily tell what's new in a file.
Cool.
I'm hoping that soon we'll get to do version control stuff, so you'll actually see, like, check it into version control, and then I can ask the version control for your stuff and don't have to worry about you handing it in down the road. So that's the end goal, is that you just work on it, and then when it's due, I'll go look.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do anything special.
Oh,
but
awesome.
We're still, the trouble is there's so many concepts that I think are helpful. It's which ones do I teach you guys first?
Yeah.
And so that's hard.
And for the entries, you don't care what they are, like, if it's just a checklist.
The only thing I care is that for each of the days that we have a class, that I see a star entry with one star.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what the title is, but I want to see the date stamp, and I want to see a colon day.
Okay.
That's
the
it.
Tag, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, it depends on the person, what's going to be helpful for you.
Right.
And if you're doing mostly paper, like, if that's what you're best at, then that's okay too. And I don't want to, like, take away too much of your time from that, but I want to at least think about the idea of electronic log.
Yeah.
Because paper is really pretty handy in the short term.
Wait, what's paper? What do you mean?
Like, dead trees?
Like, actual paper.
Actual paper. Yeah.
I don't know, like, if you're talking about some crazy software called
paper. Yeah, no. There's a software called Papers Plural, but we won't do that. No, I mean, like, a dead tree.
Yeah, okay.
And with that, it's fine. Paper usually works pretty well in the short term,
right.
But when you have 10 years built up and you say, I'm looking for that one thing I did a while back,
yeah,
it gets very hard.
Yeah.
Quick report on everything that you've done in your career up to this point for your next job interview. Okay. You know, that gets hard.
Right.
And so my hope is that if you build up an org mode file for your work, like, you could have a separate file for each class, or you could mix it up, but then one Unix command could search all of those files in a second.
Yeah, cool.
That way you can pull things apart. All right, so let's jump into today to some announcements. First one is I've created a Google group. So we have a Google group for the class. I've made it public, so people who aren't necessarily in the class here can join too. We have some folks at NOAA and other places that are watching the classes. And this is for however you guys want to do it. If you want to discuss or ask questions here, I'll watch this. You can discuss things with each other here. That's totally fine. We can also completely ignore this. It doesn't cost us anything to set it up. And know that, like, if you're doing a research project with a couple people and you don't mind it being public, you can put up one of these for any project. Like, if you want to do one for Summer Hydro when you get there, you can create a group and then discuss things. It's a nice way in terms of being able to have discussions on homeworks or concepts, or if you guys, you know, if I write something that's a little confusing, you all can figure out what your version of those notes are. And I've also created, for each lecture that I've done, a blog post. They're really boring, but the blog post isn't about the post more than a place for, if you find typos, you're welcome to submit them in your log files. That's fine too, but the folks in the rest of the class won't see those until I do something about them. So here, if you post a comment, then it'll go in there and we can discuss it and figure out what's going on with a particular thing. So feel free to use these comments if you find a typo or if you have a question on the homework. I also get emailed when these things get comments. So there's one for each of the classes going back a ways. And the entries are really boring. But it's more about a place just to be able to write notes that everybody will see. And I just put a link into the ones we have so far. We've got 11 up so far. And the big news of the week is that Steve Jobs just passed away. And hopefully you all have been able to get the org file for today and make a class directory under class/12. And make sure you've got the org file inside of that class today. If your org file is somewhere else, when you create a file and you work with the org between Emacs and an IPython shell, you're going to get confused for sure. So this way, if the org file's in there and it's open, that sets Emacs's path to be right in that directory. So that'll help us keep track of things. We're going to start off with some more setup. Now, at this point, we're pretty close to the point where we're going to really start digging into actual geospatial fun stuff like projections and QGIS and working with more data. But we're going to do a little bit more setup to get Emacs really happy. And you guys are learning a whole ton of stuff so far. I'm really impressed. But we'll dig into setting up the last few bits of Python, IPython, and Emacs so that you can run Python code from pretty much wherever we'll be in this class. I'm going to collapse it with Shift-Tab, and feel free to use the same mechanism in your lecture notes if you want to. So I'll tab on Setup, setting up your editor. Start up Emacs, and for starts, just to get going, if you do a metax server-start, this is going to create a special server that listens for requests to edit files. If you're writing a bash script, you can actually have the bash script tell Emacs that it wants you to edit something, and that when it's done, please let it know, and it will then pass back and continue on. We're going to use this from IPython, especially, where you're working within the IPython shell. If you're working on a script, you can say, I need to go edit it some more. So go ahead and hit Enter. In my case, it was already running. Metax server-start. Now, you won't have to do this in the future because we're about to set up your Emacs so it's always running. It won't say very much. And you'll know it's working in a moment when we try and use it. This is going to set up, it tells Emacs to be listening for requests to edit files. If you open up a terminal, and if you say Emacs client readme.txt, that would be the best. We're going to do everything from class 12. And the other thing is that if you send me a help question about homework or something in the class, it's really helpful if you're working in the terminal to copy everything, including the prompt, because it tells me which path you're in up there. So oftentimes when I'm looking over your shoulder at something you're working on in class, I'm looking at your path to see if you're in the right spot. So you're in a terminal. From the command line, you have not run IPython or anything like that. You're just using regular bash.
Can we see anything happening?
If you hit Enter, you should see something like this, where your Emacs pops to the front, and the terminal says, waiting for Emacs over here. So if you go into your Emacs window, yep, and do the command that I have on the whiteboard, the metax server start, and that's metax. Server-start. So now go back over here and try it again. So you've had it running, and you, by running metax server start, it restarted the server, which is okay. So now go into your terminal and say Emacs client space, and that's one word, yep, space readme.txt. Yep, there you go. So now you're in staring at a blank readme.txt. So yeah, if you're in Emacs, that's too low. You're missing out on the buffer below. You got to see the whole thing. So now do metax, and that's hold down Alt, and then an X. Now let go, and type server-start. Press Enter. Now go back to the terminal and try and run that Emacs client. And type Emacs client space. Press S, and then a C, and then Tab. Space readme.txt. You've got a couple things going on here. So I would go over here, okay. Click in there, just do a Control X 1 to make your. Yep, and then go back to your terminal, hit the up arrow, and run that.
I need to go to the man page for Emacs client while it was waiting for Emacs.
So just click in this window and just wait. This. It's off, busy doing something, so it's going to ignore you.
Okay, great.
For now. Okay, so in this file, type whatever you want, like hello, and we're going to save this. Control X, Control S to save. And now you're going to type the command to say, I'm done editing this in terms of Emacs client, and that's going to be C-X and the number sign. It's kind of awkward to type. So if we do a Control X, and then the number sign. and it will disappear on you. Right now it's set up, unlike mine, I have mine set up to not disappear, and I'll get you guys there in a second. Hopefully it came back to your prompt.
Emacs. I still had this screen. Am I supposed to have a blank Emacs?
And run the Emacs client. So you run this command, and then after you've added some text, then you do this. So now if you're in the terminal, you should see your readme.txt. So now we're going to do almost the same thing inside of IPython. This is where some of you got tripped up. There's the export editor equals Emacs client. Copy that line and paste it into your terminal. And press enter. It's gone. Yeah, go into your terminal. Do a control U. Do an ls-l. And see how you have a readme.txt. So now you can type cat space readme.txt. So cat, C-A-T, space, capital R, tab. So you do a control, you hold down, so for one, your Emacs buffer is again off the bottom. So you'll hold down control, press the letter X, then you let go, and you'll do a pound, so shift 3, and then hit Y. And so now you've written the CX pound into that file. So go up here and do a cat or a less of that file. So capital R and then tab. Press enter. So there you're looking at the contents of the file and then Q to quit out of that. So go ahead and start IPython. So it should look familiar. And we'll do edit hello world.py. So anytime you're in an IPython shell, once we have this all set up, if you want to create a new Python script, you can just type edit hello, you know, whatever your script name is. And if you want to edit something that already exists, you can put in that file name and press enter. And you're now editing hello world.py. I'm going to do a control X 2 to split that, and then control X and then the B to switch buffers, so I can see my notes again. If you don't feel like doing that, you can just read them from up here. So we've done this edit hello world, and let's put something in it. Let's just say print hello world. And when you're done with that, this command right here, the control X and then the pound, you can run that, do that real quick afterwards after you've done the hello world. So I'm going to press control X and then a pound. It's going to ask me, do I want to save the file if I haven't saved it already? And I'm going to type yes. And what did it do over here?
Where does it ask you if you want to save it?
So if I edit this file, let's do this again here, edit hello world, and I go over to my Emacs, and I make a comment, for example. And now if I run control X and pound, that's great. If you've already saved it, it's one of those things that most people who've been using computers a long time start saving without even thinking about it. Then you type yes, and it runs your script. So I think you had a calendar. What it did is it closed the buffer, and the next available buffer was the calendar from you making a log entry.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. No, it doesn't default to giving you a calendar right afterwards. So.
Okay, so that's...
Yeah. That says we're done editing for the client, so we're done for this. So that doesn't say, it doesn't say save. What it says is I'm done editing for this edit command. So you need to be in the Emacs window, click in there, and now do a control X and then a pound. Shift 3. So now do a control X and hold down shift and press 3. Do not press control. There you go.
This message appeared.
Yeah, the messages, I wouldn't worry about the messages, but do a control G, do a control X 1 to make yourself have one window. Now do control X and then the pound character, so shift 3. So now it says, do you want to save? You press Y. And if you go up to your terminal, you'll see that it ran it and it printed hello world. So here it finished, it came back to here, it closed that file, and it ran the program and printed hello world.
What are we doing? We're editing Emacs with
you're in a shell doing Python,
yeah.
And you say, I want to make a Python file, so edit the file name. It goes tells Emacs, go edit this file, and when you're done editing, you say, okay, I'm done editing, and then it tells IPython, okay, go ahead and run it.
Emacs is more powerful.
There's no really edit text inside of IPython and save it on a disk. This is creating a file or modifying a script file as you work on it. I think it's one of those things that will do it a lot of times, and you'll start getting it. If it's confusing at first, just let it kind of go past you and sort of absorb it without trying to worry too much about the details. Control G to quit. No, it's just restarting something inside of Emacs, so it's not a big deal. If you see server restart, that's okay. All right, I'm showing you guys many ways to run Python, so I apologize that I'm giving you lots of options here. We are now about to set up your environment so that you have Emacs set up all the time for this. So open up your .emacs file, which is in your home directory. So this is do a Control X, Control F, and then you're going to give it /.emacs.
What if you don't have that?
Then you're going to be creating one. So if you went through all the classes, hopefully you've got something like this in there already. And you're going to take the text that's inside of this down below here, and you're going to paste that up into your .emacs file and save it. So it's waiting. So click in here at the bottom of your file. Yep.
Does it actually matter where?
It doesn't actually. As long as you're not sticking in the middle of something else, it's OK. OK, are you opening up a .emacs, though? So Control X, Control F. So if you look up here, sorry, I should have put a circle around this. There should be a period in there. So if you're editing your Emacs file without the dot, it's not going to work. So there has to be a dot in there. Did you add the text on the bottom? So now we're going to go edit one more dot file to get set up. We're going to open up your .bashrc, and you're going to close your eyes to all the craziness that's in there, and go to the bottom of that file. And I have the line down here. You're going to put that at the bottom of your bashrc export editor equals Emacs client. We did that once in your terminal, and the next time you have a terminal, that was going to disappear and not be available. So now you're going to set the editor. Every time you start up a terminal, this script runs and will set your editor to be Emacs client. So now you need to open up your bashrc and do the next thing.
Well, I didn't save it or anything.
Not a problem. You can just do, an easy way to do is go up to buffers at the top there. Go back to your .emacs, and there was a little star next to it, and see how you got those stars there. Yeah, you're definitely right, you haven't saved it. So do a Control X, Control S in there, and now you've saved it. Perfect. You're editing a backup file. Do you see the pounds in there? Those pounds means that you're not actually editing the file that you want to be editing. I would kill that buffer. Control X and then a K. Press Enter. And you want to open up your the actual org file as opposed to the backup file. Now 12. So don't open the ones with the pounds in front of it. Just open the actual 12.python.org. Be very careful when you open files because there's lots of other stuff around. All right, we're going to skip the rest of the configuration for the shortcuts because I want to get you guys moving towards Python stuff, which is more fun than setting up Emacs. So now at this point, if you've done that, you need to quit and restart both your terminal and Emacs. Quit. So here it says, do you want to kill it because I have an active process? I'm going to say no because I actually don't want to log out. I've already been set up. But you're going to, if you get this, you'll have to say yes. But go ahead and quit and restart your Emacs. Oops. So then do an exit out of your IPython. And exit out of your terminal.
Is it bad to just close it?
No.
What do you get out of exiting?
If I had something running in the background, which I haven't taught you how to do yet, it's OK to just kill it. You can just kill it. So then cd class 12. So I'm going to now run IPython PyLab. So now we're going to check our work. And we're going to run PyLab and see if the editor is set. There's a module called operating system, or OS. And we can say os.environment And we're going to look in dictionaries more in the future, but editor. So we're going to run IPython in the class directory right there.
Oh, with PyLab?
You can do, yeah, I'm going to try and do that all the time just to make myself get in the habit. Or I'm going to forget in the future and then wonder why we can't plot.
You had us close Emacs and you had us close the
terminal. Yep.
Why did you do that?
With that, it's causing it to all reload the config files to make sure. We're going to double check so that for now, forever after in the class, when you come back, this stuff will all be set up. And if it's not set up, then you're going to be confused the next class.
Okay.
So we're going to test it. So go ahead and run that command up there. Press enter if you've got that line. It should say Emacs client. And run the import OS and the OS environment. And you're looking, hoping that it's going to say Emacs client. You're getting a whole bunch of stuff that deals with the operating system. You can type help OS, and it will tell you something about what it's going to be doing. You'll get a sense of it as we go. So here we're just using it without learning too much about OS. This is just a double check. So if you don't have Emacs client, we need to take a quick look at your system and figure out what's wrong. Uh-oh. Let's look at your bash RC.
No, we did that.
So do that. Yeah, did you open that up? So
yeah, I did, but he said... Yeah,
dot bash RC. Yep. Go to the bottom. So escape and then greater than. So meta greater than. So you've got right here a dash where there should be an equal sign.
I keep this open just for my
so save that. Control S, Control S. Control G to quit out of the search. Yep. Control G. Yep. Now do Control X, Control S to save. Kill your terminal, start a new terminal, and it should have it. So open up that terminal that you had over here.
Oh, yeah.
Kill that guy. You can just fuck the X up there if you want. Nuke it, terminal, IPython, or cd into the class directory first, and then now run IPython. And now you can actually hit up arrow, and now try running that command with the, it won't, press enter. Yes, awesome. So now we've got IPython set up and Emacs set up. So we're going to work on a script today. We're going to call it first.py. So if we go in here and we say edit first.py, press enter. It's going to bring this up, and I'm going to do Control X 2 to split, Control X B, and switch back to my notes so I can see. And we're going to go type in there, or you can copy and paste, user bin env python print. Hello world. So this is our first script that we're going to work on, and we're going to keep going on this same file throughout class today. So go ahead and type in this text. You have an error in your .emacs file. So I'm going to do something for you really quick, and then we'll come back and fix it after class.
Yeah.
So we'll just do... So now if we kill it, go ahead and start Emacs again. So now you don't have an error message in there. So now go ahead and run IPython and try it again. Yeah, I'm guessing an extra parenthesis got created or something. In the middle of class, it's hard to figure those out. Okay, so save that file. And now, if you do a Control X pound, this time the file won't disappear, because I don't think that's very fun to have your file disappear every time you edit it. Say you're done, and then it disappears from Emacs. One of those settings that we set up told it to not get rid of the file every time, because that, in getting ready for class, that drove me nuts in about 2 seconds. So now we've got our first.py that we can use for the rest of class. And I'm going to explain to you a little bit about how programs get run. When we did shell scripts, we did pound, bang, bin, bash. And if this is the first line of your script, this says go off and run this command, which is bash, and then pass it all the text in the rest of the file. In Python, we're going to use a slightly different look, usr bin env. This isn't Python here. That's a little surprising. But then you pass it Python. What this does is that some people on their systems have multiple Pythons. If they've got like Python 2.7 and Python 3 and 2.5 and all sorts of special builds of Python, this lets people control which Python gets used. By default, it's just going to grab the first Python from your path. And if people are fancy, they can then play with their path and change which Python. For us, it doesn't matter. and people often just hard code the Python, that's typically just a bad thing to do. So this is the official line to use for the first line of your Python scripts that are going to get run. So just copy this one. Don't worry too much about the details. If you really want to know more, you can read the man of ENV and its very strange sounding program. But basically, that's what this does. And so this, if this is the first line of a script, it says, please go run Python and pass it the rest of the text in the file. Yep, question?
Is that needed just to run it through Emacs, or?
That's needed if it gets run as a script. If you see a no servers buffers remain to edit, that means there's nothing else waiting. So Emacs clients, there can be multiple ones running around, and it has a list of all the files that you want to edit, and that means there's no more left. It's not very exciting because we're only doing one at a time. These tools have all sorts of extra fancy features that can be used, and we're using only a small bit of their power. And for those of you who get your screensavers too often, there is a screensaver thing under setting. I had to do this. System preferences, screensaver. And you can set your screensaver not to lock when it turns on because, well, we're not really protecting anything too valuable in our virtual machines here. So we can go back over here and we can actually do cat first.py and you'll see your program. In IPython, if you want to run anything, so ls-l, there's my first.py, and inside of IPython you can say run and first. You can either say first or first.py, I think both of them work. So there's first or first.py. And this run command will go off and run a Python script for you.
What's cat?
Cat, it's like a dog, but different. Cat dumps a file to the screen. All right, we're going to skip forward a little bit. Let's go do some Python because we've spent too much time with Emacs here. So let's go continue on with our reading files with Python from before. So we'll hit tab in there and we're going to take a look inside of our reading a file with Python. If you control C inside of this little window, it's going to write back out that last time we had a data.csv, we wrote it with Python. This is the same kind of thing in terms of if you just run that, it's going to, so if we do an ls-l, there's no data.csv in there. If we run this, control-C, control-C, we type yes, that we want to evaluate the code block. We're in the cursor's right inside of the begin, so we hit enter here. It gives you no results, which is unsatisfying, but if we go back here and do an ls-l in the IPython window, we now have a data.csv. You could have also copied it from your class 11 directory. The trouble with this is there's about 100 different ways that we could create this file. So that way we just pressed two characters and we got to have the file again. Take a quick peek at it again before we move on. Data.csv, cat. And we'll then see our three lines of our comma separated value file. This is super important data. All right, so last class we were doing something like this. We were doing a data file open, and then we were doing read line one at a time down here. So we can say data file equals open data.csv. So go ahead and give this a try. Just make sure you can read the data file. So data.datafile.readline. Now remember, I'm pressing tab. So make sure you can open that file so that read doesn't fail. And we can say read line. And so I was going to warn you guys that when you see this, this is me working through the command. I press tab, it gives you the options. If you try to run this line right here, it's going to fail. So that's going to have an attribute error. It doesn't know what the heck that is. Don't worry about what an attribute error is, just that you didn't type the right thing, unfortunately. Read line. And anytime you want to run a function, you're going to use parentheses. And we'll start putting arguments in there, which is what we did with the command to open stuff. But what goes in there are the arguments to that function, the things that we give it about what we want it to do. So if you read a line, you'll get back the first line of the file. We'll do it again. Read line, and oops, this is where we left off with the, what the heck was that? So now we're back to where we were last time. And we'll try some more playing with Opening file. So let's try a different way of reading that file. So I'm going to copy. So we're going to reopen the file, which basically takes it back to the beginning. So this is sort of rewinding the file by reopening it. And data file read lines. Now it looks almost the same, but that S is pretty important. This is going to read all of the lines at once, which is pretty handy. So you don't have to loop through and know how many lines there are. You can just go ahead and run that. So they're all there. You need to do another open. So see how I've got on 17? Data file equals open. So now if I try to do it again, I'll get nothing. I'll get an empty list. That wasn't very exciting because we didn't save that data anyplace. So let's do the open yet again. So on number 20, I'm going to go ahead and open the file. I'm going to rerun this data file read lines, and I'll say lines equals that. So I've saved it into a variable. I can then say print lines. So now we have a list of all of our lines of data. Now, read lines is pretty handy, but if you have 100,000 or a million lines to read, it's going to try and load them all into memory, and your machine is going to get very slow. So this isn't the preferred way to read data in the long run, but it's a great way to get started.
I can also say lines equals out.
Are you getting fancy on me over there?
Will it be the same as that?
You can totally do that, yes.
And it will be the same.
That would be perfect. Okay. Right. That's very advanced and cool, yes. I'll explain that probably in another video. So now we've got those lines. We have a list like we had before, and we can just say line sub 0, and we'll get the first one. Line 1, we get the next one, but we can go back and get 0 again, and it's not lost. But we have some trouble in that we're getting more than we expected, and there's a function that you can do to strings called strip that removes white space and new lines. So anything that's a space character or a tab or a new line, we can get rid of those. So I'm going to do that again, and we'll do strip and then two parentheses. So we're going to run this function called strip on lines. And notice there's two blank lines right here. There's two right there. But if we look down here after 26, there's just one. So it got rid of one of our blank lines in our string. And you can see those blank lines are actually printed up here as slash ends in our list. So what we can do then, if, for example, if we want to pull out the x and the y, for example, the left and the right, we can do split. Now, if we did split like we did before, it's just going to do a white space, whereas we wanted to do it on the comma. So we can pass in this argument saying, please split, but use the comma character to split up our string for us. So if we do that, you're now going to see that it's split into a small list here that contains 1, comma, 2, and then this unfortunate new line. Now you can chain things together. So we had this nice strip command here where we stripped the line and we got rid of that extra new line, and then we can split after that. Now this is a little complicated. And I'm going to go up here and point out the differences. So here we split and we had the new line stuck in there. Here we've split it and there's no new line. So we have a nice clean list of our different fields. So what happens is it runs everything here first. And once it's done the strip, it then adds on to that and runs split on the results from this guy. A little confusing, but we'll see this a couple times when you kind of add on functions and you can keep doing more stuff to a string. So if you look at my notes, I actually have a little yikes. You can stick it all together. It gets confusing. Let's go ahead and take this text in this block, copy this, everything in here. So meta W, once you've highlighted it. I'm going to do Control X 2, Control X B, and I've got a process list next, which I don't want. I'm going to hit Tab. It's going to give me a list of buffers. So yours is going to be probably different. Some of you might have like calendar or something else. What we want is this file called first.py. You could click on it, or we can type first and press tab. The other way that you can do this is click in the window if you had something else here, and you can go up to buffers and select. There should be first hiding in there. First is up there, so you can click on first. If you've already got it, then you're all set. And paste in all of that stuff with a control Y. Now, if you're feeling really uncomfortable with Emacs and pasting like this at this point, go back and watch those videos again. The idea there is you can watch them a couple different times and then ask me questions once you've watched them, or post some questions on the YouTube page and we can discuss what's giving you trouble in terms of Emacs. And I'll do a Control X 1 to make it one window. Now that you have that text, we can go back and remember the run command. We can type run first.py and it will do everything that we've then saved in this file. Except for I did something that I didn't intend to, and I got hello world only, which means there's some stars down the bottom down here. Those stars say you didn't save, so I need to save. Control X, Control S. And if you do this, you should see a whole bunch of stuff come out. So what I was showing there was just different ways of doing the same thing. And I missed doing this part of the example to break it up for you guys. So I'm sorry. This is actually what I meant to show you guys right here. So going through it variable by variable. So why don't we go ahead and do that one by one, and we'll watch this go through. So we have our lines. And from there, we can say line equals lines. And we can pick a... So we'll grab the first line, so 0 with our square brackets. We'll print line, so 1 comma 2. Now we can also now say line equals line strip. We can get rid of that new line. See how there was two blank lines here? So now if we print line, we get a much shorter, or if we say print line, we don't have two lines there. We've just got this 1 versus 2. So we've gotten rid of our new line. We can kind of do this step by step. From there, we can say fields equals line dot split. Break it up by the comma. And then to see what's in fields, you can either type print fields or just type fields in the IPython shell. And you'll see that it's 1 comma 2. So I'm going to go down in the notes a little bit farther. And let's learn about for loops. We did them in the shell, and they were kind of touchy, and if you put a space in the wrong place, the world blew up. Let's go ahead and play with some for loops in the IPython shell. So I'm just going to hit enter a couple times, give myself some mental space. If you see just tons and tons of this stuff, sometimes it numbs the brain. So we'll say for item in, and we'll give it a list, 1, 3, 6, 9. Now, this is a reminder that you can stick a list. Any Python object can be in a list, so it doesn't really matter. And the for loop stops with the colon. That's the definition of the outer loop. And then after that, we press enter, and it's going to then ask us for what goes inside of the loop. And you're now going to hit the trickiest part of Python. This is different than most programming languages. Python cares about how you indent your text. If you indent with a tab versus a space, it thinks of it as a different block. It's actually forcing you to write pretty code. And for those of us who have had to deal with too many years of not very pretty code, it makes us happy. But it will bite you a couple times in the beginning until you get used to it. So here, IPython is for us indented 4 spaces. It's not required how many spaces, but 4 is the recommended number of spaces to indent to create a beginning of a loop. So let's say print item. And if you press enter, you're now waiting to type the next thing that's going to happen through each loop. If we're done, we have to give it a line without indentation. So print enter twice. That will end our loop and run it. So let's try that with our file. We'll say my file equals open data.csv. So this just shows you that before we call the data file, you can call it whatever you want. If it's descriptive, it's better. If it's random characters, that will work, but it's confusing. The nice thing about files is that they have the same property of a list, that you can keep going through it and you get the next item until the end. So let's do for line in my file. So we're going to do a for loop. And what's going to happen is each time through the loop, the for loop is going to go ask my file for the next line. It's going to say, hey, give me your next thing. Please return it. And let's just go ahead and print it. Print line. So again, to finish that loop, you're going to press enter twice. We're going to suffer from that same problem of printing with that extra line in there. So there's a new line attached to each line, and then we're also printing out, which causes a new line. So let's redo that with the strip. Line.strip. So here I've hit the up arrow, so it's kind of gotten rid of this little prompting that it meant to have for typing. I'm going to paste this into the Emacs window so you can see it, what it would look like inside of a file where it's more natural. So I'm going to do a Control-X-B, switch over to my first.py. I'll do a meta greater than to jump to the bottom, and we'll paste that in there, Control-Y. So if you see here, I press Enter. It takes me down to the next line that's indented, still in the for loop, so we could say print, you know, maybe some dashes or something. And then to end that, you go back to the beginning to the right. So this is print done, for example. So it'll go through this loop until it's done with the file, then it finishes that loop by not being indented anymore, and then it will print done.
Do you have to have that blank space in there?
The blank line?
Your last print, because that's not in.
I can write it like that too,
okay.
Except for that's hard to read. So sometimes it's okay, but typically it'll just be confusing. So let's go add that in here. So we'll add a print, maybe some dashes. We'll go back here and we'll say done. I'll see how brave am I if this actually works. Done. Don't do the done, just hit enter after that. Now you don't see anything because I forgot to open the file again and reset it back to the beginning. So let's do that. So my file equals open.data.csv, press enter. And now if we go back up, so I hit the up arrow to get that command again.
When I hit the up arrow, it just indents.
So hit the up arrow, keep going.
Oh.
There you go. Press enter twice, three times, and there we've got it. And then the equivalent to this would be like print done, and that would be the same as what we typed in our script down here for these guys. That's it for today, guys. The better you are with that, the faster you'll be. And when you get really good at this stuff, people will be totally blown away with what you can do. I sit in the back of meetings at NASA, and I'm listening to the conversation, and I control sometimes the screens around the room, and people will talk about a concept, and figures will just appear on the screen as we're going. And it kind of freaks out the managers, but that's the kind of things you can do with things like Emacs and IPython, where when you get really good at this, as you think through stuff, graphs can pop up, you can build figures, and really crank through the data fast, and be able to be thinking more about what the data is and less about the mechanics. So the more you learn about Emacs, the faster you're going to get processing data. And the combination of IPython and Matplotlib and Emacs is going to give you the ability to, especially if you're on a ship, and that ship is costing you, you know, $20 every minute to be out there, which is not unreasonable. So imagine taking a $20 bill out of your pocket every minute, putting it on the table. That's what we pay for ships. So it may not feel like that when you're at sea, but that's what's happening, is that money is going away. It's going into gas and paying for the crew and the meals that you eat. So being fast with this stuff will actually make a big difference in what you can do at sea. So being able to take a quick peek at the data, plot stuff up fast, will make a big difference of how much you get done. And if you get to the point where you're in the class here for Summer Hydro, you don't have very much time. You've got 2 weeks to do everything. And being able to see that tide station data right away and make a plot of it, see what's going on, and evaluate it quickly means that you know right away whether or not you've got good data or bad data and whether you can go on. And it's definitely held people up in the past in this class being hijacked by the data. So give it a go, read through those videos, post questions on there, and I'll try to answer them as best I can. And if you guys have some questions that aren't